Nation, this marks the 30th anniversary of the siege at the Waco Branch Davidian cult compound and the death of David Koresh and hundreds of his followers, including children, which was just a terrible tragedy. And we wanted to take this time to go back and look at our previous episodes. We did a two-parter, Waco, the Branch Davidian cult, and the rise of David Koresh, and Waco, the Branch Davidian cult, and the siege at Mount Carmel, way back on episodes 164 and 165. So we're going to release those so you can revisit those. And right now, if you go to Netflix, there is a new series about the Waco siege that is definitely worth watching. So it's something that we definitely don't want to forget. It was one of our more serious topics that we've covered and something that I think everyone should be familiar with. So we're revisiting that this week. And today is the Branch Davidian cult and the rise of David Koresh.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't have a cult secretly funding us. Just go for its Patreon sniff money. This is Hysteria 51.
Then why the hell do you keep dipping into my bot boost profits?
One. People are dumb and they buy that crap you make. I want to get that out right off the bat. Two, once someone smells Gofor, there is zero chance at repeat business.
I don't like you, but you have a point.
That other unfortunate voice is Conspiracy Bot, a resident robot who is supposed to help the show. And I think I've said this week after week, he doesn't.
No one likes you.
No one likes you.
Sweet comeback. I see those improv classes have paid for themselves.
I don't go to improv classes. I just leave the house to get away from you.
So it's a win-win, and I thank you for that.
Moving on. So getting into this week, because it's a doozy, we got a two-parter. Part one this week. We got a returning guest and a newbie this week, C-Bot. And they're both more educated than you are.
$13 says I can take them in a knife fight or rap battle. I spit bars and cause scars.
Are you done?
For now.
Anyway, like I was saying, let's welcome back to the show. I think you're pretty familiar with his song.
His name is...
Kevin
Crispin.
Kevin!
Wow.
Tension breaker.
Yeah, that was that had to come out.
So, what's been up?
Oh, this, that, the other thing. I've been really curious about, there used to be this diner in Waco, Texas called the Empire Diner.
Hmm.
And I had it on a t-shirt when I was a kid and I thought it was cool.
Was it actually like an ironic one, or you had went there and liked it?
I believe my stepmom had gone there or something and had it, or I got it at a fucking Goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
We used to buy a lot of t-shirts at Goodwill back in the day.
Yeah, well, now it's like that's, or at least for a while, that was in vogue to do.
Yeah, stop putting the hands around your face like that.
Sad times, still plugging away, traveling.
Sad times is going, doing a lot of traveling for work. So yeah, Sad Times, you can find us, of course, wherever you get your podcast, just Sad Space Times. We're kind of on a bit of a break because I am traveling so much. I just got here from New York today.
Literally, he came from with luggage from the airport.
Yes.
And then he leaves back on Monday.
Yeah, so. Flying to Houston Monday, yeah.
But, well, you know, he's been traveling, he talks about sad things, so I had him come in this week because I just wanted a fluff episode that we could laugh at and have fun.
Yeah.
And real lighthearted.
I appreciate the effort that you made to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say you failed.
Well, and you're not the only one here, though, because...
No, I'm not.
You know, Mr. Vernon, Mr. David Koresh, whatever you want to call him, he was an aspiring writer. He wrote some stuff. We have another... No, a published writer. So he's been on Sad Times. If you listen to Sad Times, you've heard him on there. And he just had his... His new book is out as we speak, like a day ago, J.T. Brown. And we also had him on here because he has an interesting look at this whole case. He is a mental health professional. That's why him and Kevin are friends.
I pay for his services.
It's necessity. JT, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Brent. Can I say I have bumper envy?
You have bumper envy? Well, let me tell you about the months and years I've toiled in the Hysteria 51 mines to get a bumper.
He's got the
Thank
taste of
much.
The gruel still on his
That's
lips.
Right. The gruel is just into my beard.
It's a beautiful, beautiful bumper. Absolutely.
So tell us about your book. Your new book just came out.
Yeah. So plugged away at it for about 3 years. It's called Scab Among the Stars, and it's available on Amazon either in Kindle format for the low, low price of $2.99,
nice.
Or the paperback version if you are a hands-on type for $18.99.
I tell you what, it's awesome too because it's about aliens that cross picket lines and on union disputes in space.
Yeah, the green Jimmy Hoffa is really
lie.
Good stuff.
That's a bold-faced lie.
I read the jacket. That's where my mind went. You know, I don't know.
Can I say something too about the book?
No, please.
I read an early copy of it, kind of a finished draft, but close to the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fantastic book, and I'm not somebody who likes speculative fiction often. I want to like it, but it doesn't often draw me in. This book, I had it in a binder, and I was carrying a binder around with me everywhere.
It was a trapper keeper.
Well,
yeah,
he's more of a Seven Seals kind of guy. That's what he really likes to.
Damn right.
Fire
yes.
and brimstone mm-hmm. type
there,
stuff.
There is a decent amount of fire, brimstone, yeah. and child sacrifice in my book. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man, we're firing on all cylinders this week. We got ringers all over the place. Not the ringers like in your Trapper Keeper, where you printed out and kept his book, but very similar. So where can everyone find it? You said Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon, again, either Kindle or paperback format.
Scab Among the Stars.
That's right. It's the only one of that name. Surprise, surprise. I'm so
Which
surprised
is weird
that
because
that's it.
My email is scabamongthestars723.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, July 23rd was a bad day, wasn't it?
Yeah. We don't talk about that.
Okay, then.
We are going to talk about a tragedy this week, and we're going to break this up into two. We were looking at this. The Waco is something that is a huge story, so we're going to break it up. This week, we're going to talk the cult and the founding and the methods to that. Next week, we're going to talk the actual siege and what happened.
Excuse me, cult? I don't know if I would use that term here.
I'm pretty sure that this is in the book with cults.
In fact, I saw the picture of them in the encyclopedia as a representation of a cult.
And as you know, he celebrates the entire Funkin' Wagnalls encyclopedia. So.
Yes, he does.
So Waco, David Koresh, the Branch Davidians, Seventh-day Adventists, all this stuff kind of gets worked in together. So what I'm getting at is buckle up for hilarity, because this is a funny story.
And it's uplifting,
You're
too.
Just going to slap your knees. And, you know, if you love the government, everything, it's just really I don't know, man. There's so much to this story, but the siege that is so famous that we're going to talk about was February 28th through April 19th of 1993. 26 years ago right now.
One of my favorite years.
What?
Why?
Just so much fun stuff happened that year. Janet Reno bursts onto the scene. Waco, of course. Rodney King testifies in court. The Great Blizzard of 93 strikes the eastern United States, killing 184. The West Memphis Three were tried and convicted. The Unabomber is mailing crap. Don't ask, don't tell. The Great Flood of 93 happened. The World Trade Center bombing. The list goes on.
You are seriously fucked
why
up.
Why is... I don't understand why you allow him on the show still.
Thank you.
Ah, Jesus Christ.
It's more like it's a... If I don't, I'm probably going to have to unleash him on society.
You know, I think he would be a very effective cult leader himself. Do you think he's the lamb that could break the seventh seal, perhaps?
Hey, prick. Don't steal my lines.
Do you guys remember the Waco siege happening?
I do too.
Yeah, so I talked to producer Lisa. She's aware of it, but she doesn't really have a lot of memories of it. This was a big thing. I remember a lot of it. And I remember, for whatever reason, that tank, and instead of a gun, it had that battering ram, like ramming into the building.
Going into the wall, and it looks like the wall is almost paper. Because of the force of it, and it just kind of crumples.
Well, and they also tore down a bunch of cottages that they had there.
Uh-huh.
and made that compound. So I'm sure it was probably kind of shoddily built anyway, and there was tunnels under all of it and everything.
You're saying the Messiah oversaw something that was shoddily built?
Well, you're busy being the new lamb.
He's got those spiritual wives. You got to understand they take a lot of time.
You know what falls first in the new Messiah's coming? Building codes.
Built, yeah. Man, you got a lot of union jokes going over there, buddy.
Hey, you know, you can turn water into wine, but 60 inches between studs just falls by the wayside.
Oh, man. Well, John, I imagine that you're probably regretting coming on this podcast.
You know, I remember the siege as well. I remember because one of the rednecks from our school told me a joke that I didn't understand. He said, "What's Waco stand for?" And I said, "I don't know." He said, "We ain't coming out." And I didn't, at that moment, I was like, what does that mean? And so then I went and I asked my parents and they told me what was going on.
John Thomas and I, for those of you who don't know, grew up together. We're very close friends. I think I know who told you that joke and I'm picturing it in my mind. And
the man has no neck.
No.
No Neck Jones.
Yeah, you knew No Neck?
Yeah.
Shit.
It's the craziest thing. This story, though, it's so infamous because it was... I think it's safe to say so poorly managed and executed by our government, the ATF, the FBI, Janet Reno, Bill Clinton, everyone that had fingers on it kind of just goes, man, ugh. And so many people died because of it. Many women, children, innocents, as well as officers.
Oops, killed some kids, as the saying goes.
That's not a saying. That
should be.
No. Kevin?
Yeah.
I think you were right about him.
Yeah, I've been right the whole time.
Yeah, it's for real.
You know why I put up with him? My bumper.
Is he the originator of your bumper?
God, he didn't have anything to do with that, did he?
Well, I mean,
because if so, I would like to maybe talk to him after the show.
We're gonna have a good talking to him. Oh, he's gonna want to talk to you too about his new religion that he's gonna be pushing. For real, though, 76 people, like we said, including children, died during the siege and fire at Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel was the location of their compound. And before we get into the whole siege and tragedy, let's talk this week the Branch Davidians and how all that came about. Offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists. We talked about that.
I just say, do you know who a Seventh-day Adventist is today?
No.
Ben Carson.
Really?
Yeah.
And what was it? The Egyptian pyramids were...
Grain silos.
Joseph put his grain in there. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I need to tell you guys this. You might be confused, but the Branch Davidians aren't a groovy party time offshoot of the... I say Adventists. It's Adventists is how they say it, isn't it?
Correct.
Adventists. Seventh-day Adventist. Yep.
Yeah. Branch Davidians, guess what?
Yeah.
I already said it. It's a religious cult.
Jeez.
That's the religious cult. Wow,
I guess there's that many of them, huh?
Well, you know, we're not chopping
our
balls off and going to...
Does that play whenever someone would go into the church? Would it?
Every time.
Every entry?
It's like you're entering a CVS.
Pretty much. They checked your pockets, too, to make sure you had a gun, as opposed to...
Oh, man.
But the thing about this cult is, like so many oh-so-fun ones, this was an end-times group. This was very much a... This is the type of group that I think of when I think of Poltergeist, the guy from Poltergeist, like, come, child, come with me. Are you lost? Are you scared? Except for he was in a rock band, and he banged a lot of broads.
So, Brent, can you give me an example of some happy non-end times cults that just think things are going to keep going and it's going to be golden forever?
Seabot has a pamphlet.
That's true.
If you would be interested in.
Gotcha.
Yeah, right. Like, I guess there are probably cults. Like, what are they talking about? The guy from 30 Seconds to Mars. What's his name? The actor.
Yeah. Jared Leto.
Jared Leto. Right? Yeah, uh-huh. Now he's like, they're saying, starting a cult. Having people, he's dressing in white robes and talking to people on a beach, and you can go see.
So you're saying he grows tired of writing nickel and dime science fiction, and the way to make real money is to start a religion?
That is the best way. It's going to be called Jared Letoists.
Letoists?
Yeah, they're going to...
Excuse me, guys.
My so-called
Leto
death
level.
Instead of my so-called death.
That's the way it goes.
Guys, can we just, please, Oscar winner Jared Leto, okay?
There you go.
Thank you.
Don't be a joker.
Get out of here. But Suicide Squad.
The big thing about this is the Book of Revelations, like we said, Brian Firebird, so Lamb of God stuff. Jesus is coming. The end is nigh. It started back in 1959 by this guy named Ben Roden as an offshoot of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church. and they practice some strict shit under his rule. Stuff like the Sabbath and the seventh day, you know, you keep that holy, abiding by dietary laws of the Old Testament. No caffeine, no cloven hoof stuff.
That stuff's tough. I mean, I have to drain all the blood out of the animal before I eat it. I mean, yes, all the blood, all of it. That's
and not just for fun, for religious reasons.
That's right. Why not both?
Yeah.
So then we got in 1929, Victor Hotef, or Hotef, came up with the shepherd's rod idea. And this was a prophecy that he was a divine messenger of God. Boom. Ben believed it. The guy that we're talking about, Ben Roden, he believed it. And they believed that on October 22nd of 1844, God the Father and Jesus moved from the throne on high, from which they were in, you know, judging everyone in the universe, to the most holy place in the heavenly sanctuary in order to fulfill the anti-typical Day of Atonement. This is their wording that I'm just using here, wherein they were to go through the books of records in order to judge the people's deeds to determine their rewards or punishments. That means they left the throne on high and came to earth.
I'd just like to point out that October 22nd is John Dooley's birthday. Thank you.
October 22nd, 1844?
Yes, he's very old.
Awesome. He claimed that his job was to gather, and this is a number you all heard, 144,000 people from whom the book of Revelation say will be saved from God's wrath at the end of the world. So he needs to find these people. He needs to group them together, get them together, prophesizing that this world would be restored. The kingdom of David in Palestine, and Hotef founded the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists, changed his name to David because that's what you do if you're Davidian.
Oh yeah.
And began his quest in Mount Carmel. That is the place that became famous right outside of Waco, Texas.
Mount Carmel makes me think a little bit of like a place that would maybe be in Candyland. If after you make it through like Gloppy's area and then you go through the Candy Cane Forest.
Next up, Mount Carmel.
And then you're on.
Oh, that sounds like Guts.
It does sound like Guts. It's like
a crag, agro crag?
Agro crag, man.
This agro crag's fucking delicious. So what they taught was this investigative work of finding who is worthy to be the ones to go to heaven, so to speak, has to begin with those who are already dead in order to decide who was to come up in the resurrection of the saints and those who were to later come up in the resurrection of the wicked.
So say your prayers and eat your vitamins.
Exactly. You know.
That's right, brother.
Yes, brother. Very importantly, they also teach that or taught, whatever you want to call it, that eventually the judgment would pass on to those who were living in order to determine who would be translated without seeing death at Christ's second coming. Meaning, no longer was it going to be from the dead and this intangible God. Someone on earth was going to have that power, living person. And these Branch Davidians saw that Lamb of God as a person was going to hold those powers. And those would be destroyed by the brightness of his coming, as they put it, the rest of the people.
And obviously that is, you know, on a more serious note, that is a perfect backdrop for an opportunistic individual to insinuate themselves into that position.
Man, I tell you what, Messiah complex is a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
You know? And it's that's a hell
of a
drug.
I had one until I was like 19.
Well,
I got better.
No shit.
I
now
felt
he's
better.
I got better. So Roden, he told the Seventh-day Adventist Church that the rod that the judgment has passed from the dead to the living, that was what they called it. The dead, now it's the living. The person who's making the decisions is alive and on earth. That was going to be on 20th of October, 1955. He tells them that, boom, that's like a power move. He's like, give me the power. I'm going to be able to do this. Didn't exactly work out. We'll get into that a little bit more.
What?
Yeah, Roden died in October of 78.
Uh-huh.
We're just skimming through some of the details before we break them down. His wife, Lois, and son, George, then led the sect until the emergence of, as we know him, David Koresh in the mid-80s, who he wasn't David Koresh at that time.
He had a much better name before.
Yeah. Old Vernon, and I just love that name.
That is an excellent
name. Vernon. Yeah. Sounds like the guy that would have made the Waco joke to you.
Yeah, it actually was. It was actually a guy named Vernon.
And
no neck.
No neck.
No neck.
So they just handed it over to good old Vern?
Oh, no. No, no. He took it with force in a gun battle.
You are evil.
Yes,
evil.
So gun battle ensues. Police arrest both George Roden and Koresh. But get this, and this is all just, we're painting a picture. We're going to break this down.
Neither was convicted of charges from that fight. Roden, though, was imprisoned for contempt of court, and while Roden was in jail for other reasons, which we'll get into, Kresh paid back taxes on the compound that was in dire need of them.
Boom, he takes over. Wait to talk about what they fought over in court. It's pretty intense.
We're going to get to that, and it is delicious. So, Colt, there was just a real quick overview. Strict religious following. Things with cults. Leader picks and chooses who is saved and who isn't. That was the power that they were saying. This person has this power.
So if he was unhappy with you, he could say, you're not saved anymore. You're going to go to hell. Out.
Yeah. I'm sure there are checks and balances, though. Right?
Oh,
there
sure. Probably just plenty like of people that are keeping them
honest. Of course, there always are in cults.
Election cycles.
Your diet and all parts of your life are strict, structured, and ruled over with all these rules. And that's an important thing, too, that people, you know, it's not all kumbayas and lovemaking for the people that aren't.
Well, it was all lovemaking for
control.
Him.
Yes. Exactly.
Hey, look, he just had to get those 24 something or others.
But, you know, think about this. So you surround yourself with these people.
Uh-huh.
Someone's in control, and that control grows and grows and grows. And that's what I was talking about earlier. This Messiah complex is a hell of a drug. You know, when people, I don't even think people a lot of times realize that they're starting a cult or in a cult until it's a full-blown cult.
It must be, yes, very intoxicating to the point where you don't even you don't even realize, I don't know.
Well, when you're in the middle of it, you're just like, well, this is, you don't understand.
And I want to make sure that we riff on a little bit from a mental health perspective, the eerie similarities of multiple failed artists who went on to start cults. We can talk about that.
Well, you know, you're going to, that's an interesting thing. Failed artists from Hitler to Manson to this to that. And yeah, it's there's a lot of, I don't know where that breakdown is, but that's got to be a specific psyche type thing.
I have a theory with no data to support it whatsoever.
Well, then you're in the right place.
All right, good.
How do people fall into this?
That's what I
want to
know.
About.
Yeah, so you have the Messiah complex right on one end where somebody who maybe not at first wasn't going for that, but then they see, oh my God, these people are actually under my sway, and now I will
Well, how do the people fall for it?
That's what I want to know is I can get people... these must be people who are really looking for something in their life.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. It doesn't. So people assume, oh, these are all people that had, you know, 10th grade educations. And there are certainly some, but that whole existential hole in the soul, it extends to everybody. And
there
so
was Harvard graduates, everything were in this, like with people that were. Something missing is an interesting thing.
Yes.
And people
it knows
want
no
to be
borders
a part.
And barriers.
Yeah,
yeah.
People
I mean,
want to be a part of something. And
yeah,
you feel like you fit in.
And as a former fundamentalist, as we talked about on Sad Times, you know, you really want answers, and cults tend to give answers. They don't really encourage questions, but by right. God, they will give you answers.
And they'll give you answers, and it'll be a crisp, in 2 years from today, this will happen. Yep. This will happen. So it's like a black and white view of the world. Plus, cult leaders, another thing that we kind of didn't talk about, but I think is true, are very charismatic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Vernon was also a charismatic gentleman.
It's like oh my
terrible
God.
Gentleman. But
it's like Norm MacDonald. He's like, everyone wants to go back in time and go back and kill Hitler. That's silver tongued devil. What if I get back there? He just weaves a web of lies and he talks so good. I just fall for it. He's just talking and they're like, you're not supposed to say that. But he was a good talker. Making fun about everyone says, oh, but he was such a good talker.
And the thing about Vernon is he actually was dyslexic and was not actually a particularly skilled reader, but he had an eidetic memory and could just wax poetic on, I mean, whole books of scripture.
Well, that's a great part. Let's go to break real quick. When we come back, let's talk Vernon.
Yeah.
Vernon Wayne Howell and how he became David Koresh. We're going to do that. Kevin, did you have a statement? Or?
No, I just holding in a fart.
Don't trust it.
We're going to talk that next on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And, you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rashate, you're 50% off. Rashate. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
That was why I keep growling.
You're just angry. Maybe you're just you love Colts. Do you love them as much as Vernon Wayne Howell?
No, I did not dedicate my life to them. I don't know. This guy annoys the piss out of me.
Well, that's good. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Vernon Wayne Howell was born in Houston, Texas, on August 17th, 1959. Mm-hmm. That's not when David Koresh was born.
No. His mom was the ripe old age of 14.
Yeah,
is that correct?
15.
That's 15. Was she 15?
High school.
Okay.
So,
fucked up.
Real quick, you were talking about this. He was intelligent, but mm-hmm. he was dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
And he had that picture memory that he could remember everything. But because he was dyslexic and it was, you know, back then, guess what his nickname was? Mr. Retardo.
Wow.
That's what they fucking call him. And he claims, now this has never been put, but he said he was obviously made fun of. He said at 8 he was gang raped by other boys at his school. And that was never confirmed. Bonnie Sue Clark, the mother, she was 15. She was non-existent. She was a high school dropout.
Yeah, he was raised by his grandparents?
So his maybe? Yeah, so she couldn't afford to raise him, so the grandparents kept him most of the time.
Oh, side note, Bonnie Sue stabbed to death in January of 2009 by her sister.
That is true.
What?
Yeah, no, it, she was stabbed.
She was stabbed to death in 2009?
Yeah, by her sister.
Wow.
Wow.
That's I did not. That's news to me. I didn't know that.
C-Bot coming in with the facts.
You know, C-Bot's always uplifting. You know, I think his bumper should be "Wake me up before you go go."
I'd rather we just leave him hanging.
Robot.
Like you're talking about though, as a child, he would memorize quotes and sections from the Bible, and people look back at it. They said he would like give these quotes and say them, but he was just looking for attention.
Yeah,
he was just wanting people. He didn't really understand. In fact, he did actually become a Christian, born again. He was 22. When he actually really got into the church. He dropped out of school in the 11th grade at 16. And again, people say it was because of that bullying.
Wouldn't he?
Like, get out of here, Mr. Retardo.
But even with the horrible bullying, wouldn't he also, like, go away for hours at a time and pray? Like, he was really into that? Or
it's
am
hard
I
to read?
Yeah, so the thing is, there's a
mixed
lot
messages out there.
He went first. He did turn to religion. At first, he began as a Southern Baptist, turned Seventh-day Adventist, and they say that he was born again on at age 22. Now, what that looked like, I don't know. I think that it might have been an excuse of just getting away from people as a young age, they said, because he also lied a lot, was another
what?
Thing.
No. He did not.
Lied a lot. I mean, as far as like, you know, things like saying, you know, they don't know. Things didn't always add up.
I'm going to go ahead and say that most of it's probably bullshit.
Well,
I guess. No, okay. Maybe not most.
No. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Speaking of bullshit, though, the Seventh-day Adventists, they had some issues with him. And so they kicked him out, or they disfellowshipped, he was, for bizarre beliefs and lifestyle. That's actually a quote from Shirley Burton of the Seventh-day Adventist World Headquarters. Disfellowship for bizarre beliefs and lifestyle, and which sent him to the doorstep of Mount Carmel. Actually, he came there as a handyman looking for work. And not only that, though.
Yeah.
He was a rock star.
You're damn right he was a rock and roll star.
Now, that might be putting it a little heavy-handed. He played music. You know, I listened to him. He didn't have a bad voice.
Oh, really?
Did you
actually heard some
music?
Of his. Really?
Yeah, and a couple of I watched a couple documentaries, and they had him playing music. I mean, he just sounds interesting. Like
later, he played at a band at the compound, right?
Right.
Wouldn't they play all the time too?
The compound was interesting. They were always doing things. They were making money.
Yeah, selling guns
legally. And
yeah, they had a gun dealer in the group.
Guess who really liked him? All the local people.
C-Bot?
Yes, yeah, exactly. So.
Again, he was probably extremely charismatic.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, hey, they're a little crazy, and they smell like patchouli, but, you know, they mow.
And he also, though, was trying to not only make it in music, but he also tried to make his fortune and fame in Hollywood as well, from what I understand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then was spurned by that, and then that's when he kind of came back into the fold.
So we were talking about that quote from Shirley Burton that he was kicked out for speaking against the sanctity of family. He was a polygamist is one of the things that she's getting at there. Claiming that others beside Jesus could lead people to spiritual forgiveness. That's the thing we're talking about where we're getting to that harder Branch Davidian talk where they'd come up with, guess what? The person's going to be here on earth. They're going to make those things. Calling himself Vernon Jezreel, borrowing from scripture reference to the Avenging One. So anyway, he's at Mount Carmel. He gets there. The Branch Davidian compound. Every good cult, as we know, they need a compound.
Oh, yeah.
A lair, one might say. Oh, like we said, and he's not just there as a handyman. He's a rock and roll aficionado. And Kevin, if I remember right, you celebrate his entire discography, right?
Right. He is, in my mind, a reprehensible, horrible liar and, to a degree, charlatan. But he really could wail.
You said you like him. You said the Beatles could almost live up to him.
I'm going to go ahead and stop doing this joke, you motherfucker.
I heard him on Austin City Limits once. He was excellent.
Fuck you, Brent.
Hey, hey, I'm only repeating what you say.
That, shut your mouth.
Don't run this with words. So he moves there in 80. He moves there in 81, 82. There's a little bit of conjecture. It's a 77-acre compound outside Waco, Texas. Mm-hmm. And Vernon, in a power move, this is a heavy power move.
Yeah.
He starts banging Lois, the former leader's wife.
He
now
starts
leader.
Fucking her?
She's in her late 60s or early 70s.
No. She's 77 years old.
Wow. He's in his late 20s.
So, yeah, I thought he...
So okay. the wife of former leader Ben Roden, mm-hmm. he's banging Lois Roden, 77 years old on a 77-acre ranch.
Wow, hot.
He starts claiming he's getting prophecies from God, and like any cult leader in training mm-hmm. should, boom, those are power moves, all of those.
Big power moves.
Yep. Now, here's the problem. Lois had a son, George, and old Georgie, he didn't like this at all because he's co-running said religious cult.
And he's got
Lois.
No need for a stepdad.
No.
Especially not one who's probably younger than
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Lois... If she dies, Georgie wants to lead. He's the heir apparent to the Davidian throne. But spoiler alert, old Vernon, he wants to be the leader. You know, he sees this is his opportunity to take over. She starts giving Vernon, David, I'm going to keep calling him Vernon because he's still Vernon or trying to, because that's a staunch change.
It is.
Still at the time, she starts giving him more and more power against George's will, I guess I should say.
Do you think that she really had feelings for him?
I think she liked the attention and mm-hmm. liked getting banged, and it probably, I know that sounds dirty, but it probably made her feel like a person again, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, where there's a will, there's a way. And who's to say she wasn't just a fucking bear cat in the bed? I mean, you slap some lube down and she's ready to go.
I hope George wouldn't say that.
Around Waco, they said, that old Lois, she could suck start a Harley, and, you know.
Yeah.
That's just the way it
they
goes.
They can't.
You say, so she had a chandelier that she was hanging from in the,
yeah.
in the bedroom?
Woo!
Woo, baby!
So I said she started giving him power, like, she's letting him preach, let him teach to the people, and... By 87, there's a rift, so good old Vern leaves, and he moves to Palestine, Texas. But the thing is, this rift, which we're going to talk about, a lot of people had taken his side. So a lot of the followers didn't like George. They move with him to Texas, mm-hmm. To Palestine, mm-hmm. and they're living in like trailers and crap
in, like,
out
buses,
there.
Right?
But they got their gats with them.
Yeah, and so what do? Eventually, when you want to do it, you want to get back, you want to take control. Well, you storm the place and a gunfight ensues. But get this, guys, why do you storm your old place? You need, you know, as you much know, as you want to do it, you need good reason.
I know. I was reflecting on that. The only reason I would storm a religious compound would probably be if I thought the leader was exhuming dead bodies and promising to bring them back to life.
So there's
that's
two
weird.
Versions.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's two versions to it, and it depends on whose story you're going to take. One is that he had been told that George had exhumed a body from the ground at Mount Carmel in an attempt to resurrect a deceased woman. The other story is that George challenged Vernon to prove who was the true prophet. He said, I'll exhume a goddamn body and you bring it back to life to prove you're the prophet. But in another power move, old Vernon goes, well, guess what? No matter either way, I'm calling the cops.
Yep.
He calls the cops.
That's cold. That's cold.
Like, and here's the deal. He called the cops as a directive from God.
Yeah.
And he told me he threw out his shoulder, which was why he couldn't resurrect the dead. He really has to. You have to really.
You got to have that rotator cuff.
Yeah.
He's quoted as saying, and also, stop fucking my mom.
Yeah.
I don't know if that came through or not, but that's part of it.
That was redacted from the transcript.
Either way. Yeah. That is fucking bold. Hey, give me a minute. I'm going to go get a fucking body. And we're going to go razzle dazzle that motherfucker. And we're going to see who's the real Messiah here. And he goes, you know what? These are my people. I don't want that consecration or desecration of these bodies. And people go, that is good for you. The
that's
cops, though.
Wait, that's all it takes?
Well, the cops didn't believe him. the cops were like, you know, I don't know, Vern. I don't know. So what's he do? He goes in fucking guns hot a blazing.
Yep.
His people charge in and attempt to get proof.
When I search for proof, I always go in with multiple automatic weapons as well. When I mean, that seems like that's the way you'd want to obtain that.
I don't know why you live such a predictable life.
It's the religious way.
Yeah.
That's Christ's way. Mm-hmm.
So they go in there. They're going to see what's going on. George is shot in the process. This whole thing blows up. This whole sex with mommy thing came back to bite him in the ass in this too and in the future.
And not the way he wanted it.
No, because so the cops come in. They're going to arrest everyone. Everything's going on. George also during this time, he claims that he got his mom preggers. Uh-oh. 77-year-old mommy's pregnant.
Yeah. And Koresh, if I remember correctly, well, I wasn't there. Sorry, if I remember from my research correctly, she
good cover up. Oh,
thank you. Had a miscarriage, and he said it's because she didn't have enough faith, and that was kind of a way.
Are you sure that's not a
her.
Professional wrestling story arc? Because I think I remember that from like 2009. Yeah.
Then she gave birth, but it was only a hand.
Yeah, it was a hand.
Yeah, it was
Mark
actually,
Henry
yeah.
and Mae Young,
and then it was punted by Snitsky into the third row.
Wow,
the
other thing that was quite a great little segment we just.
So he was questioning about this shit though, if it was true, and to the cops he said jokingly to the police, if I got a 77-year-old woman pregnant, I am God. And I guess that quote was even said in kind of like a tongue-in-cheek way. Mm-hmm. And they're like, got him, he thinks he's God. That was one of the things they were putting, because they're building a case at this time, and we're gonna get into that too, about the crazy stuff that he's doing.
Wow, but what kind of case are they building against you, Brent?
We don't talk about that until
I'm just saying that how often I hear you talk about your divinity.
Kevin, as Brent's legal counsel, I'm going to advise that he does not answer you on that question.
You have legal counsel here?
Jesus. He can neither confirm nor deny.
Producer Lisa is a woman of many hats.
Jesus.
Hats. So, powers of be claim, boom, he's God. You know, he's saying he's God, but that's for later. Less than 2 years later, George is not doing well. Mount Carmel is losing support, is spiraling into debt. And then for shits and giggles, old Georgie finds himself convicted in prison in a mental institution for murder.
With an axe.
A man named Dale Adair told George that he was the Messiah. And in response, he fucking split his face open with an axe.
Oh, is that all?
That's all.
Oh, I don't know why it had to escalate so quickly. Meaning putting him in a mental institution.
Yeah, you'd think that'd be a slap of the wrist in Texas. Right. That's the old Texas hello. So Roden's in prison and he owes thousands of dollars in back taxes. So boom, Koresh steps in and becomes the leader of the Branch Davidians. I mean, he was a smart individual and he was very calculating. And when people tried to bait him, he kind of he took that advantage of it. And in 89, 8 years after his arrival, then as a Branch Davidian, Vernon has gained total control over this entire group.
You know, I think that, and I mean this sort of tongue-in-cheek, but also sort of accurately, I think that Georgie was playing checkers, but I think that Vern was playing chess.
Uh-oh.
You know what I mean?
I hear ya. Yeah. King me.
He was indeed king.
Careful. He can move in any direction.
The king of kings.
Yes. So let's go to break real quick, because this story, as we're speeding through it, it gets weirder. And when we come back, we're going to talk the day-to-day shenanigans at Mount Carmel.
Oh, Jesus.
And spoiler alert, they are not cheeky fun shenanigans like mine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cheeky fun.
That's true.
Who's that guy to you? Not Koresh, the damn robot.
I am Alpha and Omega.
Have you seen the Tom Brady's court sketch?
It is the greatest.
I saw a woman made a pencil skirt of that drawing.
Oh my God. Oh Lord. So we're back. We were talking fun sketches during the break. We know him as David Koresh.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm saying sketches. We know, but to this point, he's still been Vernon Howell, and he's now the leader of the cult, so he changes his name, as you do.
I don't know why I didn't just stick with Vernon Jezreel.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Okay, then.
And I can weigh in a little bit on the name thing as far as some of the OT history that I think gives it real flesh on the bone.
Sure, go for it. Why did he change his name?
Well, so David, of course, being King David, which was of the Israeli and Judah.
King of the Jews!
Exactly.
It sounds like a fucking sports drink. King of the Jews.
That or you're yelling out an order at a fucking Burger King.
Yeah, I'll take. Oh, that was in Clerks. He's like, I'll take an egg a movie muffin and a King of the Juice.
All right, let's let poor John Thomas finish his point.
Totally okay. So Koresh, interesting little riff on talking about the history. So the kingdom fell, you know, the kingdom of Israel and Judah fell. And then the Jews went into what's called diaspora, which is where they're kind of spread all over. But the Babylonians noticed that there were a disproportionately huge amount of people in Judaism that could read and write. And that was really a useful skill. So they took those folks and they essentially
kept them. Even to this day, it helps reading and writing.
To be able to read and write, yes.
I'm the dissenting opinion.
So they kept them in captivity, slavery, whatever you want to call it. And they were freed by the Persians. Mm-hmm. So at that point, Cyrus is the leader. And he surprisingly is this fairly magnanimous conqueror that says, well, I got no problem with you. Go back to take your land.
Let these people go.
So he's
see,
he's
it changed it. Not let my people, let these people.
He's embraced as a Messiah. And in the Old Testament, Messiah didn't necessarily mean anything divine.
Yeah, it was just
meant like essentially someone who saved us.
Yeah, exactly. And so Koresh is Hebrew for Cyrus.
Correct.
And you said the Babylonians. So in that story, they're kind of the bad guys?
Yeah, so the Babylonians are the bad guys in the Old Testament, and that motif is carried forward into the New Testament, into the, ready, Book of Revelation.
Hey! And I don't know if you know this, Cyrus is also, Cyrus the Great, he's referred to as, is also remembered because he chose the form of the traveler the last time that Gozer the Gozerian came.
Ah! You know,
traveler has come. Shoes.
3 feet above the covers. Well, the reason I asked about the Babylonians is, didn't Koresh, and maybe we'll get into this, so I'm sorry if I'm jumping the gun, didn't Koresh preach that the American government was Babylon?
Yeah, and so Babylon is, like I said, it's a motif along with Rome that is used commonly in Christian circles and sects as basically a representation of evil empire. Mm. So it could be used interchangeably.
He wrote a really upbeat song about it.
People
America's
of the Sun?
Babylon.
I don't know that song.
Babylon.
I went the Rage Against the Machine route, so I guess that says a lot about both of us.
I think it does.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, in Revelation, the whore of Babylon, who's wearing a sash of purple. So,
oh, was that like kind of like a Scarlet Letter type thing? Like she had to wear it? Or
well, so purple was, we're going off
it's
script.
A royal color.
Exactly.
Purple's a royal color.
It's the Roman royal color, specifically. Mm. So,
okay.
Yep.
Well, this Roman. Has been, that was fun. Thank
that,
you.
You played Roman hopscotch, you used to say. What was that?
Roman hopscotch.
Yeah, don't act like you don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, speaking of...
he'd land in the lion pit if he landed on the six.
Because now David Koresh, who's taken the name of King David and Cyrus the Great, becoming David Koresh, old Vernon now, is gone. Because not being a total shit stain on society is beyond him. In 89, Koresh used his power as spiritual leader of this group to take several spiritual, in quotes, as they put them, wives, as young
but
as
their relationship was very physical. The, it was not
he
spiritual.
Was fucking the shit out of anything there. And you know what? When you're in a close group and you're banging everything, all of a sudden you turn to, like he did, children. Now, Kevin, this is an interesting thing. We say 12. There was a lot of young girls in there. We say 12. Why is that? What was the legal age of consent in Texas then?
Well, my rebuttal here, I don't have my legal counsel here. Why are you asking me? No, I'm just kidding.
Don't you carry that card with you with all 50 states?
That's some C-bot level twisting.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
I believe when I was reading about this, it said that it was like 14?
14,
with parents' consent in Texas?
Yeah, 14 with consent, they could get married. They could get married at 14 with parents' consent.
Oh.
But yeah, and so you guys need to understand that this is just to create a new lineage, though, of world leaders.
Oh.
Ones in his image. It's not because he wants
to. He's taking one for the team.
Well, wait a minute. Why did it have to be the young girls?
Because he needs to. Well, there's only so many women there. And
well,
he needs
didn't
to breed
it,
all these
I
new
also
people.
Read that they had to be virgins for the 24. I know I said.
No, because he took wives of everyone there that was already a wife.
I know, but he. Okay. So I guess he just
needed
just,
the offspring.
He was mixing his metaphors.
What was it, 47 or 27? I forget how many women, I'm sorry, children he was supposed to bear that would become the new rulers. Well, guess what, though? People start talking. And this raised allegations of child abuse, which contributed to the siege that eventually was going to happen by the ATF. And the reason why he did this is he was interpreting Revelations chapter 5, especially verse 2. Crush identified himself as the Lamb of God, or the Lamb that's mentioned the verse. And the actual verse, part 2, is, "And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who was worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? Him." He saw himself as the seals. Now, do you want to talk? Are you familiar with that? Like,
yeah.
Talk to us about that. It's traditionally it's interpreted as a symbol of Jesus Christ, and that's but not for old Davey. He thought of himself as that lamb, and he was therefore Jesus.
Yeah. So if you read his exegesis on the seven seals, which he didn't get through all of it, he only got through I think the first one because it was written during the siege. He talks about that he didn't proclaim to be Jesus Christ. He thought that Jesus Christ failed in his mission and that he was the quote-unquote sinful Messiah.
Yeah, the sinful Messiah,
which we'll talk about. Which, by the way, don't you think sinful Messiah sounds like a English speed metal band from the 80s?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, sinful Messiah, thank it you, sounds like them.
Something that David Koresh would be the lead singer.
Their hit song Maidenhead, you know?
He was interpreting that obviously differently, that he was that slain lamb that would be able to open the seals.
Slain lamb. I actually saw them open for Sinful Messiah one time.
That's right.
Yeah, so this is fun.
Yep.
And the thing about this is when he's now, he is this Messiah and he's taking on these quote unquote spiritual wives. If you own it, it's his, period. You don't have anything. Everything is his. Your TV, your car, your wife, your child. He was Lamb of God, and all things were his, period. And if you're going to be in that group, you were going to abide by those rules. And what's crazy is you talk to these people, and they're like, they were talking to him, he's took your wife. It was the only way. He deserves it. You know, he's my brother. And
he separated them, right? The men and the women?
Well, because he didn't want any funny business.
And he made the men like get rid of photos of their wives.
Yeah, he was the only one that was
not their wife,
able to do that. And I mean, obviously that speaks to his narcissism on a whole nother level that when you think of the narcissistic personality disorder, you have to understand that they really feel like they're sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively the center of the universe. And so other people's desires don't really matter because they're bit players the play.
Well, I think he really believed that. Some people, you look at people that are in, you know, look at Jim Jones. Jim Jones was a sham. I really think David Koresh thought that he was in the right, or he was helping these people in a fucked up way.
Kevin and I were talking about this earlier, and so I always go back to when we talk about these type of cult leaders, I feel like they fall into one of two branches. They either fall into opportunistic charlatan, or they fall into true believer. And I was convinced, especially with the spiritual wives, that he was the opportunist and didn't believe a word of it. But after reading some of his like the exegesis, read more about him, I think he might have believed some of this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. And it may have been something where he vacillated back and forth.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's something that they in themselves are like, well, I'm having doubt, and that's because I'm man and I need to extend past this and things like that. We're talking about his wives. He did have one legal wife. Her name was Rachel Jones, and she was 14, actually, at the time of their marriage. That's his only legal marriage that he had.
Good night.
And Koresh asked his followers to embrace celibacy. We're talking about, like you said, he nullified their marriages. He took the women for himself, including Rachel's 12-year-old sister, Michelle. So he was married spiritually to a 12-year-old girl for sure. Now, some of them, there have been talks that he was with some as young as 10. The problem is when they testified, the stories changed and things like that. So it's never been for sure as far
I think
as
12
goes.
Is hideous enough of a behavior.
Yeah. I think it's all fucking hideous. And I think this guy is so, and I texted this to both of you guys after doing some research, this guy is so full of shit.
Well, if
not to say that he didn't maybe not believe this theological shit and have such narcissism that he thought he was the one who only understood the seals and opened them, but he's so full of shit.
Well, you got to understand something. If he fucks you, you're now in the house of David, and that's all that matters.
That's just because his name's on the lease.
Well, and it's also all the music they played. You got to think he was just pumping that 24/7. He wasn't listening to like
Seals and Crofts.
Yeah. He admitted to fathering 12 children by several wives, though other sources say 15, which is a weird thing. And unfortunately, the 77-year-old woman, that baby never came.
That's because faith. Snitsky kicked it into the third row.
That's exactly how it goes. People flocked to him, though. They did. Yep. They really did. And they were convinced his word was truth and that he was the real prophet. The sinner that they were promised, or so to speak. He built up Mount Carmel to include chapel, sleeping quarters, gym, swimming pool, work area.
They had a gym and a swimming pool in there?
They had everything there. At the same time, he ensured his empire by protecting, installing watchtowers, brought on an FFL, someone had a federal firearms license that was a member, brought them in there, and because of that, lots and lots and lots of guns.
Cult leaders tend to be good administrators, or they tend to at least know how to hire the right people to be good administrators. Because
delegate. You can delegate, and you delegate to the people that are that you trust. Mm-hmm. That was the problem is the mom before Lois was delegating to David when he couldn't really be trusted. And George knew that, but George had some axe splitting to do and he got ousted. He began to build an arsenal though. And this is the thing.
Scary.
I said they would go to local gun shows, local all over the country, buy and sell and trade legally. They were doing this to the letter. And that's another thing you're talking about. They're good at things. He was legally doing these. They had impeccable records.
The mag bag. That was the name of
the mag bag was they had a actual gun store.
Yeah.
And he the other thing
that
was
the name of the gun store was mag bag. Yes,
which
mag
is
bag.
Very clever. I mean, honestly, it is. Mm-hmm.
Weapons parts were being shipped there. Chemicals for explosives were being shipped there. Night vision scopes. Supplies of lots and lots and lots of ammunition. And in doing so, you start to draw attention because everything is regulated. They know what you're getting, and they also they know what you're not supposed to be getting because a UPS driver accidentally opened
that's what
a
I was
package
bring up.
Opened.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It was all inert grenades and the shit to make them work if you put them together.
Could you imagine being that UPS driver just being like, do-do-do, it's a Thursday, I'm going to go home, I'm going to have a beer, I'm going to watch, ER? And actually, I don't think ER had started yet. But anyway, and then grenades and other shit comes out of this box.
I think as a UPS driver...
He was playing In Utero at the time, in 93.
It's true. When stuff like that, you're an old UPS driver, you know to take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have it, UPS driving.
Those are the facts of life.
The world's never seemed to be living up to your dreams if you're a UPS driver, but finally you're finding out that you need to call the ATF if you find inert grenades in a box.
Get your legal counsel back on the line, please.
So seriously, though, he starts drawing attention to himself. By outside, the problem is the locals liked them. They were nice. They were cordial. They weren't the weirdos that didn't shower per se.
Those folks live in Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. Or in the woods in Kentucky. Yeah, no. And so this led all of this firepower building, all this. People are wondering, what's he doing? And then they start looking into his past. And they start looking into the past. And this all leads to the siege. And we're going to cover that next week. We're going to go over some of this that we've talked about and build on it. But this guy was a smart, dyslexic manipulator who fucked children. So there you go.
That pretty much sums it up, I think.
And there are still people today, and I will probably talk about this next week. There are still people today who believe in him and believe in what the Branch
Davidians
are doing.
There are the survivors, and then there's still other branches of the Branch Davidians who...
It just blows my mind.
And the theologian in prison that actually still writes about him and thinks he's coming back.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, that was one of the... I can't remember his name, but I know
John,
if he's in the notes. But
okay.
Go forth. John Goforth.
That's where he is.
Prison. I wasn't supposed to say it, though.
All right.
I wasn't supposed to say it out loud. There. Cat's out of the bag. So we'll get to more next week. It's a heavy topic, and we're trying to make light as much as we can. So, you know, That's what's going on. But what do you guys think? I think the best question, you know, to talk about on Hysteria Nation this week is, how do people fall for cults?
Yeah, I still don't have a good answer for that. And, you know, it is a heavy topic. I know you guys invited me on a while back to be on the Jamestown episode. Mm-hmm. Just dark and terrible. And
That's Jonestown, my friend.
That's what I meant. Sorry, Jamestown.
You changed the name.
That was thinking of James Joyce's cult.
Yes, uh-huh. A bunch of people who really, really have a good time on June 16th, 1904.
What was his big, Euclid? Was
it Ulysses.
Ulysses. Yeah.
Takes place in one day.
So just really quick, have you guys ever read his love notes to...
They're real weird.
To his letter... They are the most perverse thing I've ever... I'm like, this is 1902.
My dearest whatever.
Yeah. He talks about how he likes the sound of her farts and that he likes the quick little whip crackles. And
it's funny. Kevin actually runs a site called breakingtheairlock.com, and it's about two people putting their butts together and farting into one each other's butts. Literally, that is for some reason a conversation that Kevin had with me earlier today.
James Joyce actually started the Facebook page.
James Joyce probably did start it, and it's still better than Finnegan's Wake.
Not to be confused with Kevin's other page, spacedocking.com. You can look that up.
Please don't look that up. Jesus Christ, Brent.
David Brent. Vernon.
Oh, Lord. On a serious note, like we talked about just briefly, I did want to mention, I mean, when you look at Hitler, when you look at Manson, when you look at David Koresh, for some reason, all of these gentlemen were spurned in their artistic endeavors, mm-hmm. and they seemed like they personalized that so much that they felt they needed to have people worship them.
Well, it's like Eddie Izzard said, I can't get this street right, fuck it, I'll kill everyone! Yeah, it's like if you're not going to worship
my creation, then you will worship me. Yes.
That's a hell of a pill to swallow.
And I think it's because art is so deeply personal, and so the rejection of art feels so deeply personal. And right. If you're a narcissistic person that's like, why don't they get it? I'm great.
Yeah.
It's very, very tough to swallow.
That's a hell of a And it's right there, but people don't don't get the help they need in one way or another.
Just sorry, I'm just sitting rethinking my theater degree over here.
So, Nation, let us know about what your thoughts are on cults, and let's talk about this on Hysteria Nation. Just go to Facebook, search Hysteria Nation. You can also go to Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That is our regular page where you can find this, but there's a new way that you can find us. We just started KGRA. You can listen to us. We're on there. You go to KGRARadio.com. We're on Mondays at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 to 8 Central. It's us doing our thing on the internet radio, and it's a lot of fun. Check it out. We're going to be doing some special shows on there very soon, but we're on there already. We're on there every Monday. And don't forget, also, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/Hysteria51Pod. Leave us a voicemail, 773-669-7277. If you forget any of this, Hysteria51.com. Another podcast to talk about sad times.
Sad times. Yes, please come check us out. And if you have any questions or thoughts or
check
want...
us out. Sorry, it's a weird science reference.
Everything all right? That's like the fourth weird science reference today.
It's the greatest movie ever made.
No, it isn't. Yeah, come check out Sad Times. We got 14 episodes up. Like I said, we're probably taking a little bit of a break.
A little bit of a... Kevin isn't here anymore.
Yeah.
What is it with I touch a fucking show and they leave?
Gone.
John gets a job and he's not here now and he's coming back. He'll be back very soon.
Yeah.
And you.
That's exciting.
Then you got a new job and then you're literally never here.
I'm never here.
Like I said, you came here today
from the airport.
Bag in tow.
Yeah. Yes, sir. But please check out Sad Times.
Yeah. And then Mr. JT Brown, you've got your new book. Tell us about it.
Give
us a breakdown. We talked about. Having a scab in space, it hurts. It doesn't heal right.
No, it really doesn't heal right in this universe. That's for sure. So, all right. First of all, I got to get this out of the way. JT Brown was already taken. by another indie author. So I had to be J.T.R. Brown. When I did the research on that, all I found was, I think, an insurance salesman in Detroit or something like that. So as long as he doesn't write a book, I think I'm good. So the elevator pitch, as they say, they're on the planet Chancel. The planet Chancel is orbited by seven moons. Each of those moons is the sovereign domain of one of the seven gods.
Oh.
On the planet Chancel, human beings have divided themselves up into seven different tribes to worship each of the gods.
Including the tribe Koresh.
Right? Yeah, there's one very, very similar. Yes. On Chancel, here's what you get on the planet Chancel. So when you die, you go into what's called lunar life, which is where you're resurrected on the moon of the god that you worship. So our protagonist is a young man named Renza, who is part of the Prescient Guard. So the Prescient Guard are mystics that use hallucinogenic drugs in order to look at the future.
Not that far off from like what we think of like shaman and stuff did, yeah, or the Native Americans.
Exactly.
Like peyote and stuff. Like
exactly.
That.
So there's a theme there. Mm-hmm. And he unfortunately gets a world-shattering prophecy dropped in his lap that there will be a child sacrifice from thousands of years ago that's going to return from the moon Scab, which, whoa, is the death god's moon. And he's got a warning that there's some nefariousness afoot. That might be a threat not only to the first lives of Chancelites, but even to their lunar lives.
Their lunar lives.
You got it.
Wow.
Again, that's... I can't recommend it enough, man. It's a really good book.
I appreciate I gave him 20 bucks to say that.
Uh-huh. And frankly, I'm underpaid.
No, check awesome. It out. It's for fans of dark fantasy, fans of Neil Gaiman, fans of China Meville,
yeah, yeah.
This is going to be right up your alley. New Weird for you sub-genre fans is probably what it would best fall into.
That's awesome. That's yeah. awesome. So, well, congrats.
And, yeah.
And like we said, this will be... It'll be on a couple of weeks, this episode, but it just came out.
Yeah, you know, just came out like a couple of days ago, available exclusively on Amazon. You can read my ramblings about professional wrestling and theology on www.jtrbrownwriting.com. You'll increase my traffic. If two people show up, you'll increase it twofold.
Well, you heard that, Hysteria Nation. We're going to go there.
Go there now.
Let's talk wrestling. Let's do it on there. I'll fight
absolutely,
you all.
Absolutely.
And it's funny, you guys are here today, and then you're leaving to go watch the AEW
pay-per-view.
Absolutely.
Damn right. Absolutely.
Full Gear, is that what it's called?
Full Gear.
Yeah.
It's revolutionizing wrestling, ladies and gentlemen.
It's definitely shaking. It's the new Monday night.
Wednesday Night Wars.
Exactly. But the new, you know, it's the WCW and WWF, WWE, you know, that's when it was so much fun. So this is what that whole genre needs,
yep.
I think. And a little bit of a changing of the guard. So good for them. So don't forget, we're going to be back next week.
That's right.
We're going to be talking about The Siege.
More uplifting stuff.
Not
you
the
know,
Nuge.
More puppies.
The Not that, fuck the Nuge, man.
More flowers and puppies.
So with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Kevin.
I've been JT.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.